Good morning, everybody. If you are a first-time guest or a visitor, my name is Alexander Hildebrand. I'm the associate pastor here. And today, we are going to continue our series through a selection of Proverbs. So our text for today is going to be Proverbs 27:12, if you want to turn there. But before we jump in, I want to give a little preface. Our passage for this morning is just one verse. It's just one simple proverb. You can see it right there on the screen. This proverb is supposed to be simple. That's one of the points of the book of Proverbs, is it's made to be simple. And, I personally have found that I'm not particularly attracted to simple things, which is not necessarily good, but I've kind of found myself just like shying away from Proverbs because of its simplicity. And so if you are like me in that regard this morning, if you find things being simple or repetitive or feels like we're beating a dead horse, I want to encourage you to not see that as a bad thing, but to really sit in the simplicity, to embrace it. Because I think if you sit in the simplicity of just the simple statement, then you're going to find a lot of depth and meaning in it. So with that being said, if you are able, would you please stand for the reading of the word? Proverbs 27:12 says this, "A prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences." The word of the Lord, you may be seated. I feel like I can be done, right? Like I feel like anybody should be able to look at this verse. They should know what it means, right? A prudent person, a good person, a wise person, they see danger. And when they see danger, they take precautions to avoid it. But the simpleton, the fool, the unwise person, they just blindly walk through life. They don't see the danger. In fact, they walk straight into it. And as such, they suffer the consequences. I feel like I should just be able to be done and I can leave and everyone can go to lunch early. But that's not going to happen. So here's what I want to do this morning. I want to look at the simple proverb. I want to do three things. The first thing I want to do is I want to look at the structure of the proverb. The book of Proverbs is Hebrew wisdom literature, okay? And Hebrew wisdom literature is by nature poetic, right? And the Hebrew poets, they employed a lot of different tactics in writing poetry. They didn't really care about rhyming because their language just naturally rhymed in casual conversation. So that wasn't impressive to them. But what they did was they developed these specific structures and tactics that they would employ. So I want to study this proverb and see, you know, how they wrote it, how they put each word specifically in its place to find a deeper meaning or a deeper emphasis on that meaning. The second thing I want to do this morning is I want to apply the proverb. I want to take that meaning and I want to apply it to our lives, right? To see how this proverb actually changes our lives, to see how it changes how we should live. And then the last thing I want to do is I want to look for the gospel in this proverb. I want to see how the good news of Jesus Christ flows through this proverb, forms this proverb, and fulfills this proverb. So, are you ready? That was not a good response. All right, let's do this. All right. The poetic structure. So, I'm going to teach you a phrase, okay? Proverbs 27:12 utilizes antithetical parallelism. I want everybody to say that with me. Antithetical parallelism. That was not good. I teach high school students. I make them say things a lot when it's not good. Antithetical parallelism, okay? So, I'm going to break this down. Parallelism is a tactic that Hebrew poets use all throughout the Bible. They use it in Proverbs, they use it in Psalms. In fact, the gospel writers even use it in framing Jesus' words. Okay, and what parallelism is the author is going to make two parallel statements. They're going to make a statement A and then statement B, and they're going to run right next to each other, line after line. Now, there's a lot of different forms of parallelism, and the specific form we're going to be looking at is antithetical parallelism. That means that line A and line B, they're going to be opposite to each other. Line A is going to say a good thing. Line B is going to say a bad thing. Okay, are you following? Are you following me? Okay, good. They're going to contrast each other. I have a really simple example right here. Okay, so statement A, blue is the best color. And we're going to complete our antithetical parallelism by adding line B, red is the worst color. Right? It's really simple. You just have two statements. They match each other in form and in structure. And they come together to make one meaning. That one meaning is blue. Blue's good. Be like blue. Don't be like red. Okay? But here's the thing. The way that parallelism works is it doesn't just match the whole line to the next whole line. In fact, those lines have to be made up of matching key words. So, for example, let's look at the first keyword in these statements. Blue is going to match red. And then the second keyword, best, is going to match worst. And then the third keyword, color, is going to match color. Right? Blue and red are the subjects of statements A and B. Best and worst is going to describe them. And then color is just saying what they are, what they become. Okay? Are you following me? Okay, so when you go home, and you are sitting on your couch, you're just waiting for our amazing Thanksgiving dinner tonight, right? And a thought enters your brain, and you want to be oh so clever, oh so witty. You want to embody the ancient Hebrew poets from like 4,000 years ago, okay? You just pull one of these bad boys out, right? Husbands, you can use this on your wife. It'll woo them, right? You just say one thing, and then you just say the exact opposite thing. Boom, clever, right? You can use this for anything, right? I could say, like, the Steelers are the best football team. The Browns are the worst football team, right? You can use this with anything. Penn State is the best college football team. Ohio State is the worst college football team, right? You could use this for politics, but I'm not going to do that. So, right? Are you tracking with me? Are you tracking with me? Okay. So the author of Proverbs is employing this structure. He's employing it for emphasis, right? He wants you to know that this matters, right? That's why he's not just saying one simple sentence and then leaving it and moving on. He's doubling down. He wants you to know that what he is saying is important. And he's going to give you a good example of what to be like. He's going to give you a bad example of what not to be like. So now let's go to the verse. All right, let's look at the key words. A prudent person is going to match the simpleton. So a prudent person, the wise person, the good person, the person you should follow, the person full of wisdom, right, is going to be contrasted by the simpleton, the person without wisdom, the person who's foolish. Okay? These are the subjects of these statements. And the second keyword, what does the prudent person do? He foresees. What is the blind person? He is blind. The wise is aware. The foolish has their eyes closed. What does the prudent person see? He sees danger. What does the simpleton blindly do? He just goes on. The wise person stops. He sees danger around him. But the simpleton, the foolish person, he just walks through life blindly. He never stops. He never looks. He doesn't see any danger around. Instead, he just goes straight headfirst into it. And what happens as a result of these actions? The prudent person takes precautions. He changes course so that he doesn't run into danger. He puts up a guard to keep himself safe. He doesn't experience the danger. He doesn't experience the consequences. But what does the simpleton do? The simpleton blindly walks into it, and he receives all of that danger. He suffers all of the consequences. So these two statements, they're parallel. They're running right next to each other. And the author sets it up to make one point. What's that one point? It's watch out. Open your eyes. See that there is danger around you. Don't be like the foolish person. Don't be this blind person who just walks through life blissfully unaware of anything going on around them. Don't be ignorant about the reality of this world, but look and see and notice the evil and the danger that is around you. That is the wisdom of this proverb. That is the main message. And as we look at this proverb, I think we can go deeper. In fact, I think there are three things that we can kind of take from this proverb to help us see this point more clearly. That first deeper point is that we need to recognize that there is danger around us. Danger exists. Evil is real. We do not live in a safe world. We do not live in an innocent world. There is danger all around us. There is danger in our sin and in our bad decisions, in the ways that we rebel against God and hurt other people. There are other people in this world who sin against us and want to hurt us. There are false teachers who spew lies and deceive us. And like this passage in Ephesians says, there are spiritual enemies that we are at war with. There is danger, there is evil around us. The proverb makes it clear that for every single person who ever lives, danger is around them. I want to read this passage from Ephesians. This isn't the whole passage. You can read that on your own time, but this is just a small section. It says, "For we are not fighting against flesh and blood enemies, but against the evil rulers and authorities of the unseen world, against mighty powers in this dark world, and against evil spirits in the heavenly places." You know, I think our culture is a very practical culture. So I think everyone in here would very readily agree that, yeah, there's danger in that if you make a bad decision, that's going to be dangerous. That's going to be bad for you. I think everyone in here would recognize, yeah, there's danger and that other people can hurt you. And I think culturally and politically, like, we're very tense about that idea of other people being able to hurt us. But what we lack in our culture is this awareness that the greatest danger and the greatest evil around us is not other people, but it's this. It's the evil rulers and authorities of the unseen world, mighty powers in this dark world, against evil spirits in the heavenly places. Right? We think of this phrase, spiritual warfare. There are real spiritual forces at play. We do not live in a mundane world. We do not live in a purely physical world. We live in a spiritual world. And there are evil spirits who want nothing good for you. Right? The Bible is clear about this right on page 3 in Genesis 3. What happens? The serpent comes to Eve. He deceives her. He wants nothing good for her. He only wants to see her fall into ruin. He wants to see her rebel against her creator and rebel against her husband. And he succeeds. And so this whole Bible, this whole book is about humanity's war with this spiritual evil. These spiritual evil beings, like the enemy, and the spiritual evil inside of us, our sin. Danger is around us. Evil is around us. We cannot dismiss this. We have to recognize that it is there. But it's not enough to just recognize that it is there. And that leads us to our second point. We have to be actively aware of this danger. We have to be looking for it. It's not enough to just say, yeah, evil exists. Danger is out there. No, if that evil exists, we have to be on watch. Jesus tells his disciples in Matthew 16, "Watch out," Jesus warned them. "Beware the yeast of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." Jesus recognizes that there are false teachers. There are people who are deceiving others, who are leading them into a pit of hell. And And Jesus says, watch out. Recognize them. Look for them. They are here. You need to notice them. I think as Christians, I think this idea of it's not enough to just say the danger's out there, we have to be looking for it. I think this really hits home with the topic of false teachers. I think as Christians, all of us would say, yeah, there are people who claim to be Christians but aren't Christians. I think all of us would say, yeah, there are people who claim to be pastors, but they're not really teaching the Bible. They're not really showing people who Jesus is, who God is. They're not really proclaiming the gospel. I think all of us would say that. But when it comes to actually looking for it, when it comes to recognizing false teachers and naming them and saying, watch out, don't listen to that person, I think we become very uncomfortable and very hesitant. Now, granted, part of that uncomfortability is a good thing, right? As Christians, we do not want to be people who harbor judgment against others. We don't want to be people who are harsh and critical, and that's a good thing. But the Bible is very, very, very clear that just as much as we're not supposed to be people who judge, we also need to be people who are careful. We need to see danger. We need to recognize it. We can't just blissfully walk through life ignoring danger. We need to be aware. We need to see it. We need to recognize the danger that is there. It's not enough to just say that danger exists, but we have to be looking for it, because the thing is that danger is around you. It's coming for you. We need to be aware. And then I think that leads us into our third point, is it's not enough to just recognize that danger exists, that evil exists. It's not enough to be aware of that danger. But when we see danger around us, what do we need to do? We need to take precaution. Just like the wise person does in this proverb, we need to act. When we see danger, we shouldn't be like the blind person who just walks straight into it. We have to act accordingly. We have to change course. We have to put up our guard. We have to do something about this danger. Because the thing is that if we don't do anything about this danger, we're even worse than the foolish blind person. The blind person, at the very least, didn't even know that danger was there. We knowingly walk into the fire. And I think that's a far worse tragedy. We have to recognize that there's danger around us, and we have to act. We have to respond. We have to change something. Because if we don't change anything, then we will just suffer the consequences. 1 Corinthians 10 says, if you think you are standing strong, be careful not to fall. It's so easy at times to think that everything's great. It's so easy to think that you are on top of the world. It's so easy to see danger and think, that will never touch me. And then all of a sudden just comes and it knocks you on your feet. Right? I get this. Right? I'm a very like optimistic person at times. I've been described as the dog in the comic where he's sitting there and his whole house is on fire and he's just drinking coffee and he just says, this is fine, as his whole house burns down. I get it, right? I fall into this trap of thinking that everything is great, nothing can touch me, I am invincible, I am Superman, right? Nothing can hurt me. And then all of a sudden, I'm sitting here like, what is going on? What is happening to me? Right? I get this. We need to open our eyes. We need to see that suffering these consequences, falling into danger, it's not just a possibility, it's a probability. In fact, it's guaranteed unless we see it and we respond and we do something about it. Right? This is an imperative for the Christian. There's this part of the story of Cain and Abel. I think it's a part of the story that usually gets glossed over, which is unfortunate. After Cain and Abel offer their sacrifices to God, and God receives Abel's sacrifice, but he rejects Cain's. Cain goes off, and he's filled with rage, and he's filled with anger. And this is the part that usually gets glossed over. In his anger, God comes to Cain. God shows up, and he talks to Cain. And do you know what he tells him? God tells Cain, sin is like this monster. It's crouching at the door. It's waiting for you. It says this particular line, sin wants you. And he tells Cain, if you do not control it, if you are not a master over sin, it will devour you. We don't live in a safe world. We're not safe people. There's danger around us, and if we're not careful, we will be devoured. We'll be devoured by temptation. We'll be devoured by other people. We'll even be devoured by our own selves and our own sin. We need to be on guard. We need to be aware. We need to see it. We need to recognize it. And we need to do something about it. That is the wisdom that Proverbs gives us just in this little verse. You can see it. You can recognize it. You can change your course. It presents this picture right here. And the thing is, when I was practicing my sermon yesterday, it felt really fitting to just end it there. Right? Like, when you do something and you just have like a really good feeling about it, you're like, man, that feels good. Like, I did a really good thing. Like, that felt cool, right? Like, when I was working on the sermon, it just felt so fitting. It felt so good to just end it right there. Leave it with that story of Cain and Abel. But there's a problem if I just stop now. There's a real, real serious issue if I pray and leave right now. And that problem is that if I stop talking, if we close the book and we leave, I have given you nothing of substance over the last 20 minutes. The only thing I have given you is good advice. Because the thing is if you leave this place, you go out, you talk to anyone, any person on this earth will tell you, yeah, we don't live in a safe world. Any person on this earth will tell you, you need to be aware, you need to watch out. Anyone. Christians aren't the only people who think you need to be careful in life. If I stop right now, I've just given you good advice that you may be able to implement later in life. You may be able to make some better decisions. But the thing is that this advice does nothing about your past. This advice does nothing about the times in the future when you do fail and you do fall into danger. And this advice does nothing about the real problem. And that's our sin. And that's why we need to come to this proverb and we need to ask, where's the good news of Jesus in this proverb? Because if the Bible really is entirely about Jesus, then that means his good news is going to be woven through every single page. So where is it? Where's the good news about Jesus? How does this reflect who Jesus is? How does this change how we live our lives in a meaningful and substantial and eternal way? But I think we need to recognize, I think one of the biggest reasons why the author of Proverbs doesn't just tell you to be wise and be aware, but he sets up these mirroring statements, is because he's talking about two different people. Every single one of us, we are the blind simpleton who just walks through life. We don't see the danger, and we walk straight into it. Every single one of us. We all fail to see danger. We all fail to see the consequences of our sin. We all fail to see how truly evil we are. Every single one of us. But Jesus, he's not like us. In fact, he fulfills this proverb because he's the only one to actually live the kind of life in the first statement. Because Jesus perfectly saw the danger and the evil around him. Jesus recognized what it was. And Jesus didn't fall into that sin. He didn't fall into that danger or that evil. We know he saw it. We know he came against it. Right, when the enemy tempted him in the wilderness, when he came against the false teachings of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, we know that Jesus saw it, he encountered it, but he did not fall into it. He lived a perfect life. And while we are just wandering through our lives completely blind, trying to fumble around, like trying to figure out how to live a good life, we can't see anything around us. Jesus comes to us. And the good news from Jesus is that he can open our eyes. Just like the blind man who shouted out, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus came to him and he gave him sight. Jesus comes to people like you and me, and he opens our eyes. He opens our eyes to the evil around us. He opens our eyes to the sin in our own hearts. And he doesn't just leave us there recognizing our sin. He died on the cross, and he rose again to forgive us of our sin, instead to give us his perfect righteousness. And so the reason why we listen to this proverb, the reason why we try to follow this advice, is because this is the way that Jesus lived. And we know that in Jesus is all perfection and all righteousness, and he has called people like you and me to follow him because he gives us sight, he gives us life, and it's in him that is the fullness of all life. So as people like you and me who are struggling saints, trying to get through this life. Sometimes we make good decisions. Sometimes we make bad decisions. Sometimes we take advice and sometimes we leave it. We succeed and we fail with our eyes completely fixed on Christ. Trusting in him that he has us, that he holds us. That we succeed because he has given us the strength to succeed. And when we fail, we rejoice. Because we know we are saved despite our failures. Jesus is the center of our attention and the center of our hope. And I guarantee you that the more you see Jesus, the more you will see the danger around you. The more you see danger, or the more you see Jesus, the more you will recognize just what that danger can do. And the more you see Jesus, the more on guard you will be. That is a true statement. So let's open our eyes. Let's come to him in prayer. And let's sing a song of joy, putting all of our hope, all of our faith, all of our love into this God who is good to us, who is full of perfect wisdom, and has shown us a better way. Let's pray. Dear God, we thank you for your mercy. You are a God of perfect wisdom, and yet you see foolish creatures like us. You don't leave us in our foolishness, God, but you have given us your wisdom. You have given sight to the blind. You've given hearing to the deaf. And you've raised the dead to life. You are an awesome God. So God, it is our prayer that your spirit would be present in this place, that your spirit would be present in us, working in us, calling us to be the people who you want us to be. God, give us the strength to fight against evil. Give us the strength to fight against temptation. Give us the sight to recognize that danger before we ever get up close to it. But more importantly, God, help us to see how you have already defeated evil once and for all. You've defeated our sin on the cross. And we know that there will be a day where that evil will exist no longer, because you have already won. It's in your Son's name that we pray these things. Amen.